The following episode is a discussion on how to make sense of your royalty statements and some tricks and tips that I've found on how to make sure you're getting paid correctly, which brings me to the sponsor of this episode. I'd like to tell you about a free app that I've been using from Enverus Energy Link called Mineral IQ. Mineral IQ enables you to view monthly income, track earnings trends, and download pay stubs. It also provides in-depth valuation information you can use to make confident decisions when to sell or what to buy. It even tracks surrounding rig and permit activity and provides you with that data on a weekly basis. One Mineral IQ user said, "I had just inherited some income on a well, and Mineral IQ's appraisal feature gave me the confidence to hold on to my interest instead of selling it at the wrong price." If you aren't already signed up, be sure to visit www.mineraliq.com today to get started. Again, that's Mineral IQ to get started for free today. And I would encourage everyone to check it out. I've been really impressed with the Mineral IQ platform. And since it's free, what are you waiting for?
Are you ready to make the most of your oil and gas mineral rights? Welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. Get the knowledge and resources you need to manage your minerals and royalties. Here is your host, Matt Sands.
Welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Sands, and I'm here to help you make the most of your mineral rights and royalties. And my co-host, Justin Williams, joins me as well. Hey, Justin, how are you doing today?
Hey, doing good. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. So we have a topic that really every royalty owner needs to understand, and that's what we're going to dive into today. And that's related to how to read and decipher your royalty statements, what to do with that information, how to keep track of your oil and gas interest. And Justin, this is really, you know, once you get a well that is drilled on your interest, you start receiving royalty checks, this is something that everybody really should have a working knowledge of.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's one of the number one complaints from mineral right owners is they just aren't sure if they're being paid correctly. And how do they even go about confirming that?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most common things that I hear about. Both once you've figured out that you own mineral rights or royalties, a lot of times that's a very common one as well. As you find out that you inherited them, you're surprised, you try to figure out, you know, what to do with it. And we'll talk a little bit about that and how to prepare your estate so that you don't leave your heirs with the same issues maybe that you faced in terms of trying to decipher things, trying to figure out where the interests are located and those kinds of things. And Justin, I know you have a lot of experience with that.
Absolutely. And, you know, Matt, I think one of the first things here to talk about is what do you do with your royalty statements? And you know, used to, you would get them in the mail. Some people, some operators now can do them digitally, but should I be keeping these indefinitely or how long should I really be hanging on to these? Why are they going to be important?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if you have room, I guess it doesn't hurt to keep track of them, but a best practice I would say is probably to hold on to the statements for the number of years that you keep track of things for income tax purposes, and that's 7 years. And so at least for the 1099 forms, you would need to keep those for 7 years because those are part of your tax return. It's not necessary to hold on to them forever. If at some point it helps to go through and purge, but you know, certainly it's something where you want to keep track of those statements, understand, make sure that you're getting paid correctly. And I guess to the extent that you've confirmed that you're getting paid correctly, it's after a certain time period, then you could get rid of them or shred them. But yeah, it depends on the state and depends on kind of your personal situation, how much space you have to store them, whether you're holding onto them electronically or you're holding onto the paper statements. So,
and something I think that's eye-opening for most mineral owners, once they kind of get into or they go through the pain of really auditing and find out that there was an issue, if there was an issue, is how long back can I talk about issues? What is their statute of limitations on this? If something happened 10 years ago, can I still seek out that money or how does that go?
Yeah, and the short answer to that is it depends on the state. But in general, the answer is yes, there's usually a statute of limitations for when you can file a claim if you find that you were paid incorrectly. The disclaimer to that is I am not an attorney. We're not attorneys. This shouldn't be construed as legal advice. And so this information is being shared for informational purposes only. Just taking Texas, for example, I believe that Texas has a statute of limitations of 4 years for this type of claim. But the moral of the story here is to do something sooner rather than later. If you find a discrepancy during a royalty audit, or if you believe that you're not being paid correctly according to the terms of your lease, if you wait too long, then it's possible you could be forfeiting your rights to any underpaid or unpaid royalties. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. But whatever state you're in, if you do feel like you're being underpaid or if you find an issue when you do a royalty audit, it's a good idea to contact an attorney, again, licensed to practice law in the state where your minerals or royalties are located, to get advice. We talk about this specific issue in the first interview we did with Spencer Cox with the law firm Burns Charest, which is episode 13, which is royalty audits and litigation. And so Spencer, they specialize in litigation of those types of issues where somebody finds out they weren't paid or maybe weren't paid correctly, and then they can work with an attorney like Spencer to go after the operator to get paid what you deserve. So definitely that's why it is important to hold on to these statements for a certain period of time, to the extent that you've already audited your royalties, everything looks good, it's past the statute of limitations. It's possible that that might be something where you could stop keeping track of the royalty statements themselves. But again, like we said earlier, you'd want to hold on to those 1099 forms for at least 7 years. So,
absolutely. And it's something that doesn't get talked about a lot, but it's very important. I think everybody kind of has their own way of doing it, but is tracking those royalties. And I think some people just kind of let it roll in, and some people rely on services like EnergyLink that keep up their check stubs. But what are some of the common ways of tracking royalties, Matt? And what are some of the things that we are looking for to keep up with?
Yeah, so the things to keep in mind here is whether you keep track of it on a piece of paper electronically, like in a spreadsheet, or more sophisticated examples or some of the more recently developed mineral management software programs out there, is that you just want to keep track of what you own in one place. And that is important for a couple of reasons. And one of the things that I do for my interests, I have a list of the wells. I have the interest, the ownership interest, and the kind of verification of the division of interest. So I've gone through and independently verified when I got the division order that the decimal interest in those wells is correct by in terms of your royalty rate, how many net acres you own, the size of the spacing unit that the well's in, and those kinds of things. And then you also can keep track, although I think it's impractical if you have more than just a couple of wells, you can keep track of the gross and net revenues by the check date there, just to keep track of how much you got paid, and then use that to compare against your 1099 at the end of the year. Again, that's pretty hard to do if you have more than an interest in just one or two wells. It's pretty cumbersome. There's a lot of software solutions out there now that can help you automate the process. A few examples, we've talked about some of these on the show before. Well Profits is one. Royalty Advocate, Mineral Answers, there are a couple that are being developed there. They're kind of in beta form right now. And then most recently, Mineral IQ by Enveris. Just a disclaimer, they are a sponsor of the podcast. But the thing I like about Mineral IQ is if you are receiving royalty statements electronically via EnergyLink, like you mentioned, Justin, all of that information is automatically in Mineral IQ already, because Enveris owns both Mineral IQ and EnergyLink. So if you are already getting an electronic royalty statement on EnergyLink, when you go set up a Mineral IQ account, it'll automatically bring that stuff in. You can select the wells that you want to have it bring over to Mineral IQ to keep track of there. And it's like literally like a 1 minute exercise to log in and to create an account and to set that up. It'll automatically pull everything in. And then you have in one place, and it really doesn't really matter what platform you can use. And what we talk about today, you can do this manually on a spreadsheet, like we mentioned. And actually, I have a free royalty audit spreadsheet that you can download. We'll put the link in the show notes so that you can use that if you choose. But again, if you already are getting checks from EnergyLink, Mineral IQ is free. So there's really no reason, I think, to not go in there, at least check it out, because it does bring in and have everything in one place, at least for the wells you have from operators that are using EnergyLink, and so that you can keep track of things like, you know, where there are permits nearby, maybe where you're supposed to get paid and maybe where you didn't get paid for a particular well, it'll flag that for you and things like that, that it helps automate that normally is very labor intensive if you have to do it manually. So
absolutely. And with software, Matt, the one thing I think that often gets forgotten is you still have to take action. The software is not going to reach out to the operators if there is an issue. It's not going to do any of that for you. And quite often, like you said, it'll flag it if you haven't received a check or if something looks off, but it still takes action from us to get in there and figure out what it is that happened and make sure that you keep up with that. Another thing, Matt, is making sure that whoever might be managing your minerals in the next generation is at least aware of the software as a tool, if that's the primary thing that you're using, and that they're informed on where the minerals are and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's where I think these applications become very powerful, because you have sort of a one-stop shop, a list of all the interests that you own to the extent you're getting paid on them, you know, where you're seeing the well names, the check amounts, and all that kind of information in one spot. And some of these platforms, you know, depending on the level of sophistication and kind of the, you know, kind of price point, they can allow you to set up view-only accounts. Like if you had a mineral manager that you wanted to give access to view your information so they could prepare reports, or give them access to be an administrator and give so that you can maybe set up and view the information, just depending on how you want to manage it. And then also you could maybe set it up where your kids or your heirs that are going to inherit these interests could get a view-only account so that they can start to log in and understand more about the property and how to manage it. So no matter what you do, like if you're using software, it's like the saying goes, garbage in, garbage out. So whatever system you use, you want to make sure that the information is correct. So during the setup process, whether it's automatically done in the system or if it's something where you have to manually input the wells and that kind of thing, you want to make sure it's done correctly and that information is accurate so you can save time for yourself and your heirs over the long term. So that's important. And then I think you brought up a really good point, Justin, is that this software is only as good as, you know, the action you take based upon that information that's displayed in that system. So in other words, if the application flags for you that you didn't receive a check for, you know, maybe more than 60 days on a particular well, and you just ignore it and don't do anything about it, and then you wait 4 years and then you say, well, I'm going to go look at that. I don't think I've been getting paid on that well, you know, for a while. Well, all of a sudden now it's too late to do anything about it and you just lost that money. So it's something where you have to stay on top of it in order to make the most of these assets. So you get flagged that maybe a royalty payment has been skipped. You kind of put that on the back burner for the next month and make sure that it pops back up. If it doesn't, maybe it's still, you're not getting paid. Then it's time to go ask the operator, go contact the owner relations department, ask them why you haven't gotten paid. It could be that the well was shut in for maintenance. That's the type of information you should be able to see on a platform like Mineral IQ or on the state Oil and Gas Commission website. You can see, was the well producing? Was it shut in? And then also, or it could be that the well is just a low producing well, or your interest is small enough that the payment dropped below the minimum payment threshold. Maybe that's $25 or $100. And it's just sitting there waiting and accruing until the balance goes over that amount so that they can then cut the check. So it could be just sitting there in suspense, so to speak, or, you know, on the books with the operator just waiting to reach their minimum amount. So that's just an action, though, that you have to take, is when the system flags you that you haven't gotten paid, or maybe that new well permits have recently been filed, then you need to take action. You need to dig deeper, find out what's going on, and understand what the next steps are. And that application, you know, no application will do that for you. That requires human intervention.
Absolutely. And with mineral management, I think that in my mind, there's really two sides to the minerals management. There's the keeping up with your checks that are coming in, production, all that fun stuff. But then there's the legal side of it as well. There's division orders, appraisals, evaluations, copies of deeds, and all those fun things. Matt, those are something that we need to keep up with as well, correct?
Yeah, that's an excellent point as well, because all of those things you should have, tell your heirs where it's located so they can know what they're inheriting, know what to look for, know what they own, and help them understand how to read that information, how to use it. But to your point, you want to have the key documents at your fingertips, and whether that's electronically or in paper form, it's things like the oil and gas lease, like division orders, like you mentioned, and then also a list of those wells. And maybe that's something you print off of your mineral management software. Or if you keep it on Excel or keep it on a piece of paper, that it's somewhere where your heirs know where it's located and they know how to read it. But you keep track of everything in one place so that you have a inventory of what you own. And again, this is all just to help you manage your interests. And then also, if this is something you're going to pass down to family, then it makes it easier for your heirs to keep track of those interests and to properly manage them when it becomes their responsibility. So again, if you keep all your royalty statements in a shoebox and never tell your family about the mineral and royalty interests that you own, then they're going to be surprised to find out that they inherited those interests and they won't know what to do about it. And they might make a rash decision. Maybe you intended for them to hold on to them to pass on to their kids, but then they're like, well, I don't know, I got this really good purchase offer. I'm just going to go ahead and sell them. I don't know what it is. I don't want to deal with it. So that's where you need to take action and be proactive if you are going to pass these down to different future generations, is to educate those people so that they know how to properly manage them and they can protect that asset. And that's where organizations like the National Association of Royalty Owners comes in. They have educational webinars, in-person presentation and events you can attend, whether it's at state level or the national convention. We'll link to that website in the show notes where you can find out more. It's think resources like this show. You're doing a great service already by listening and educating yourself. We have a ton of resources on the website. So those are the types of things that come in handy to both share with family to help them say, hey, I heard this episode of the Mineral Rights Podcast, or I watched this webinar with Nero. Here's the link. Go check it out. This is something that's important to understand. So those are things to keep in mind as well.
Absolutely. And when it comes to finding some of the information, minerals have definitely taken me to more government websites than I think anything else has. I spent a lot of time on the Texas RCC and the Oil and Gas Commission for the state. You can find drilling permits and things like that. Also looking in county records. Matt, do you want to talk a little bit about where you can find some of these documents and some of these resources? I know you probably spend an unusual amount of time in the Oil and Gas Commission website as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. For when I'm doing a mineral evaluation, we have to go there and look up the well information, production data. There's proprietary software that I use for some of that. But then also a lot of times I'll go to the State Oil and Gas Commission or the Railroad Commission website and look at the drilling permit or to pull the plat or the map for that well. And so those are the types of things that you should also maybe be aware of how to find them, or maybe have copies of, in addition to just your check stubs and your 1099s and the list of your assets, is what's the next level deep in terms of the information about those assets. You know, maybe you have a list of the wells and the legal description of the tracts and the royalty rates and all that in kind of one place, but maybe it's helpful to have things like the API number of the well and the operator name and the formation that it's producing from and the depth, and those kinds of things can be also useful to keep track of, especially if you have things like a depth clause in your lease or other restrictions. You want to make sure that if a well gets drilled and it's in an area that you should be getting paid on, that you actually start getting division orders and royalty checks for those wells that are drilled in that formation. So that's where that kind of information can be useful. Just a little bit of an interesting anecdote is that if a well is drilled, sometimes it's not going to be available immediately in the State Oil and Gas Commission on their website in terms of being able to view the production data. It's a couple of months in arrears, typically, like you see with your royalty check. So it may not be reported to the state for 1 or 2 months after that month ends. And so don't be alarmed if you don't see anything there, but you expect when you know that it's been producing for a little bit. It's just that it takes some time to kind of trickle through the system and for them to report it to the state and then for them to upload it into their database and that kind of a thing. Sometimes you can shortcut the process, like in Texas, where they have production that's reported at the lease ID level, typically. Sometimes they also report at a well level. And if you know the API number for the well, you can search by the API number and sometimes find that information maybe before they've set up the lease information in the Railroad Commission. API number is just a unique identifier that every well in the U.S. gets. And a fun fact is that it is permanent and it's unique, again, like I said, to every well. And it's based on standards set by the American Petroleum Institute, or the API, and hence the name. But the format for the API number there's actually meaning behind those numbers. The first two digits are the state code, which is then followed by a 3-digit county code. And then there's a 5-digit unique well number. And that well number is sequential in order from when the drilling permit is issued. So the smaller that number, just at first glance, you can tell sort of how old that well is. So that's kind of a unique thing to know about that. And then some, depending on the state website, some of them don't have the full API number, like Texas and the Railroad Commission. If you're going to search for an API number, you have to drop the state code. You have to drop the first two numbers. So if you search for an API number on the Railroad Commission and it says it can't find it, just double check, and it could be that you're including the state code. So for example, just the Catherine Brown Unit 3H well in Dimmitt County, Texas. I just looked this up for the purposes of this show. And the full API number is 42-127-38013. But if you're going to search for it on the Texas Railroad Commission website, you would search for 127-38013, which is basically omitting the two-digit state code for Texas, which is 42. And there's no hyphens in there. So when you go to search on the map view, the GIS on the Railroad Commission website, you would just enter those last eight digits basically with no hyphen. And that, so if you have a well, you know, the API number, that's one easy way to search for information about that well. So that's why it's useful to keep track of it in a spreadsheet, is maybe then you can go to the Railroad Commission, just type in that number, search for that well, go quickly to view the production data, view any documents or anything like that about that, about your well. So that's another useful thing to keep track of.
Absolutely. And that was one of the ones early on that I found very confusing. But once you get the hang of it, that API number is really valuable for that unique identifier. Matt, we talked about before, a lot of the royalty statements nowadays are digital. So you receive those via email. A lot of people use EnergyLink. Where else can this information be found if you have an operator who's not using EnergyLink? Some still mail them out. What are the different options there?
Yeah, a lot of times if you do just get a paper copy, it's a smaller operator, there's not much choice but to potentially have that input manually. If you have a mineral management software that you use, some companies have a service where they'll do that for you and keep track of it that way. So it just depends. It's not every operator that uses EnergyLink. Some have different revenue processing companies and they keep track of them separately. But either way, you can keep track of that stuff on the State Oil and Gas Commission website in terms of getting access to the production amounts and those types of things. That's always public information. And most states have good websites where you can search for that. If not, you can use Well Database. They have a free plan that allows you to look and view well information for any state. And so you can keep track of things like all those details we mentioned. What's the API number? What's the operator name? The formations they're producing from? Production data? Those types of things. But, you know, that's something to keep in mind. It's not a silver bullet. It's not always in EnergyLink and Mineral IQ. It just depends. But either way, what the whole point of all of this is to keep track of the revenue and keep track of your royalty payments. And so that you make sure that everything appears to be correct against from what was on the check in terms of the amount that was sold against the values that were reported to the State Oil and Gas Commission, that those match, that the amount, the unit amount for like dollars per barrel that was sold that month is close to what the spot price for West Texas Intermediate was, because that's when you, how you can kind of use as a benchmark to figure out, did they actually, are they paying me based on a fair price? And just know that one of the things to keep in mind with commodity prices is sometimes operators hedge production. So they'll basically commit to selling a certain amount of production at a certain price, and they will have a fixed price for that portion of the production for that month. And so even if the price is different, it could be that because they hedged, maybe a little bit, it's a little bit higher, maybe a little bit lower than the spot price. Also, there are differentials based on the basin that you're in. And so if you have a lot of transportation fees to get it to Cushing, Oklahoma, which is where that benchmark crude location, crude hub is, well, then there's going to be a lower price that is paid at the wellhead because the operator has to pay to transport it to the market. And so you're going to get paid less in that situation. So it's not unusual to get paid less than West Texas Intermediate. You just don't want to be paid a lot less. And if there is a big discrepancy, again, that's where you contact the operator and find out why, and they can provide more information. But the most important thing for all of this and kind of how to read your royalty statements and the kind of the takeaway is that you want to be able to understand how much you paid and then understand if that was a fair amount.
Absolutely right. And then are those amounts with the amounts on your check, do they match? And then Matt, one of the things that I know I always run into is at the end of the year, you receive your 1099s from the operators, and then you have your year-end total from your royalties. And it can be really concerning if those two don't match. And there can be several reasons that I've ran into that this may be the case. One of them being severance tax. Matt, do you want to talk a little bit more in detail about when that comes up and what to do?
Yeah, that's a good point. And we talk about this in more detail in episode 97, which is how to audit your oil and gas royalty statements. So we talk about doing that quick end of year audit where you compare the check stub amounts for that year against the 1099 total. And sometimes the difference, to your point, is because that is a gross amount before any deductions are taken off. So you pay on that full amount. And that's what shows up on the 1099. So that's different than what is actually direct deposited into your bank account or what's on that check, because that is after things like severance taxes, ad valorem taxes, and those types of things are deducted. So that's important to know. And then the other thing too is it could be the timing of that check. Maybe you didn't deposit it. And so it's not until that next calendar year that it shows up in your bank account. But well, you're paying taxes on it because they cut the check in December, sort of a thing. So those are the type, like around the January, December timeframe, you just got to keep an eye on when did that check get issued. So you may actually have different production months. So you might be from a 1099 standpoint, it's maybe not the production for that calendar year. It's the check total and the revenue statements for the calendar year, which may include production from November and December of the previous year. So those are the things to keep in mind as you're kind of trying to reconcile all of this.
Yeah, dates are not your best friend when you get into these. I every year seem to find myself confused and have to kind of take a step back and go, okay, let's think about this logically. One of the things that makes it a little bit difficult is that not all operators really have a very consistent way for their check stubs. So one operator may use a different type of property ID. Another operator may be using that API number. And then the check stubs may look completely different as far as the information and especially the product codes I've noticed, Matt. Is there any common wisdom for the way that those check stubs are laid out? Or, you know, of course, there's the key information you're looking for.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of variation and a lot of it has to do with the accounting systems that they use and the format. Unfortunately, there isn't like one standard format for those royalty statements. You just have to learn how to read your particular royalty statement. And most operators do a good job of providing like the answer key at the end of the statement. They'll have all of the abbreviations with the, like you said, the product codes. Some operators use numeric numbers like 0801 is plant products, which is like, how would you know that? You would have to look at the key at the bottom of the check stub to see how to decipher that. Some of them are very easy. O for oil, G for gas. That's pretty easy. You don't necessarily need to like have an answer key for that. It just depends. But at the end of the day, what you need to be able to understand and read is what is the well name? Okay, which is usually the first thing on the check stub at the very top listed in a row separately. Sometimes they'll have a property ID unique to that operator and their accounting system, which is often not something you'd be able to match with the state oil and gas commission website. It's just within that operator. They might also list the county and state where the well is located. Below that well name and information, then on the left, starting in the first column, is usually either a product code or product type. Again, like we mentioned, it's oil, gas, or plant products, or sometimes it'll say NGL for plant products or natural gas liquids. Or that first column might be the production date. And so that's the month, in other words, and the year from when that production came from and when it was sold. And then after that, usually you'll have things like the volume that was sold by product. And so that'll be in terms of barrels for oil, MCF for gas, and gallons, usually for plant products or NGLs. And then it'll have the unit price for that product. And again, that's as dollars per barrel for oil, dollars per MCF for gas, and dollars per gallon for plant products. So if you multiply the product volume by the unit price, then that's where you see the gross value or the gross amount. And so that's basically saying, what did that operator receive for the sale of that production of that product for that month? And sometimes you'll have other information in there, but that's really kind of the key thing. That's the key thing to know, because then you multiply that number by your decimal interest in that well, and that should match the net amount. And that at the end of the check, they add up all those net amounts for the different products and different wells. and then subtracting out, like we talked about, the severance tax and the ad valorem tax and things like that. And that's the amount that you're left with and you're actually paid. So there's oftentimes other information on that check that can be useful to just verifying that you're getting paid correctly. And that's things like the BTU factor for gas. And that's in terms of basically telling you the energy content. Is that rich gas? In other words, does it have a lot of natural gas liquids in it? Or is it lean gas? In other words, is it just like basically natural gas? So again, below the gross and net volumes and the dollar amounts that are both in the gross and net will be the deductions. And that's where things like we talked about, you have severance tax, ad valorem tax, which you're going to get taken out of your check no matter, even if you have a cost-free provision in your oil and gas lease, because that is out of the control of the operator. They still have to pay taxes on the production. You might also have other deductions like gathering fees, processing fees, marketing fees for natural gas. And that is where you need to pay attention. If you have a cost-free oil and gas lease and they're deducting things for processing, marketing, and natural gas, that's where you want to dig a little bit deeper, because that could be incorrect. They could have incorrectly interpreted your oil and gas lease and you should be not getting that stuff deducted. And so that's where you would need to just keep an eye on those and make sure that those don't pop up all of a sudden if you have that, or that they're not growing over time. If you are maybe even the ability for the operator to deduct those things, you don't want them to creep up in terms of the percentage of the check. Are they getting, taking the majority of what you're getting paid? So those are the things just to keep an eye on. And then the other thing that's usually listed there is the interest type. This is something that doesn't change normally. It's where you either have a royalty interest, you have a working interest, an overriding royalty interest, or maybe a non-participating royalty interest. And again, the code that they use there will usually have an answer key at the bottom of the check statement that'll list how to interpret those different abbreviations that they use.
Absolutely, man. And there's some really common questions in mineral rights management that I think we hear all the time, and it'd be good to go through some of those and kind of get them out of the way. I think one of the ones that it still gets me every now and then is royalties are paid in arrears. You're not being paid necessarily for a few weeks ago production. Times this can be 60 days in the past. And I think that trips up a lot of people, Matt.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the reason is they have to close their books. They have to just make sure that everything is correct. And it takes time for them to get statements from the midstream company for natural gas, for example. And so it's not something they have when they immediately close the books for that month. It may take a little bit of time. And so in the meantime, they're having to issue checks to royalty owners sometimes before they have all of that information. And so that's sometimes why you'll see prior period adjustments. And we talk about that in more detail in episode 162, which is understanding prior period adjustments. And again, this is just where there's a price correction, maybe for the actual price they were paid versus what the estimate was, or maybe there was a reinterpretation of the lease and they changed the decimal interest. And so they had to make a correction there, those types of things. But basically, sometimes math errors, mostly it's just final minute adjustments in the volumes, the price, or the decimal interest. Most common, though, I'd say, is the price and the volumes. Those are not uncommon to see those prior period adjustments.
Absolutely. And I think most mineral owners are pretty accustomed to seeing that 9-digit plus decimal number that they're working with on their checks. But I know on some of my checks, there are several different numbers broken down from that that are talking about different types of payments. And one of them is the payment decimal. And they use those decimals for other factors as well. Matt, is that something that you hear a lot of confusion with? Or how should mineral owners kind of deal with that when it comes to however the operator is going about figuring their payment decimal and things like that?
Yeah, that is a confusing thing. Even for me, I'll have a client that has a different ownership decimal interest and then the payment decimal interest. And just without digging into the oil and gas lease, it's hard to know why. A lot of times operators will call those an owner interest and a distribution interest. And again, it usually is based on the oil and gas lease and it will determine why they're getting paid a certain amount for a certain product. Sometimes there's different interest between gas and oil, which adds to the confusion. But all of that at the end, when you first find out that you're owed royalties, you get a division order, and that will be where that is set. And that's the time when you need to correct that if it's wrong. Not to say that you couldn't go back and get that changed if you find some more information and you feel that they're not paying you the correct decimal interest. Of course, you should contact them as soon as possible if you think that's the case. But that's the opportunity to really verify that you're getting paid the correct decimal. And then what we're talking about with reading your royalty statements is just the ongoing payment of royalties for any production and make sure that that is correct over time. And there's a lot of stuff to keep in mind. There's things like a lot of times they flare the gas or they have use of the gas. And so you'll get that subtracted and you will get paid for that if it's depending on the terms of your lease. Again, if you have no post-production costs that are allowed, that's something to really keep a close eye on to make sure that those don't pop up when they shouldn't in terms of those post-production costs or deductions. And then go to the operator's website. A lot of times they will have on their owner relations department, they may have a sample check stub with a lot more information on how to read it. And so that's a really useful resource because, again, each operator checks are slightly different. So it's useful to go to that operator's website. And a lot of times they'll have more information on how to read your check stub. But yeah, I mean, there's lots of information out there. We talk about more, like when you go to do a royalty audit, you'd want to verify, for example, if you have a very rich gas, you'd want to verify that you're getting paid, you know, the correct amount for that heating value of the gas. And in other words, the plant products plus the dry gas that is sold, that is adding up to what should be the correct amount. And we're not going to get into that today, but just again, you can go back to the few episodes that we talk about this in more detail, which again, was episode 97 on episode 72 about post-production costs, episode 162, which is the understanding of the prior period adjustments. So those we talk about more on like how to actually go through step-by-step on verifying these things and making sure that you're getting paid correctly. But yeah, that's kind of the main things that, you know, as you go through and read your royalty statement, your whole goal for this is to make sure that the amount on that check looks reasonable and looks correct.
Absolutely. And we talked about severance tax a little bit, Matt, but how do we go about figuring what severance tax we should be charged? I know this is something that even with working with CPAs, if they're not terribly familiar with oil and gas production, this can be something that even they have to do some research on. And it doesn't always stay the same, which I thought was really interesting. Sometimes it's a little bit different at the start of the well and at the end of the life of the well.
Yeah, and this is useful to know, just to have an understanding in your state. And as that well maybe starts to become a very low producing well, you'll see that maybe they aren't deducting severance tax and you aren't owed, you know, severance tax isn't owed by the operator. And so that'll stop getting deducted from your well, from your royalty statement. But again, that's probably for the operator to keep track of, not so much something for you to keep track of. But and just for example, in Colorado, they use a tiered rate structure based on the total revenue per owner. And that determines the owner's tax rate. So in some cases, you need to keep track of it. But most royalty owners are going to fall in that kind of lower category, lower tier, especially if you have very low producing wells, which is Colorado defines that as less than 15 barrels per day and less than 90 MCF per day for gas, which is that is subject to change. This was data from, I think, 2020 when this was updated. But the key thing here is just to know Oklahoma has a similar situation for different rates based on production amounts and things like that. So when you go to file your taxes, you know, there'll be a statement you have to file and you have to pay your taxes. You'll get sometimes a credit if severance tax was deducted and it shouldn't have been, or you were below a threshold, you'll get a refund. And so just important, you know, useful to know. I think it's probably from a royalty owner perspective, just the important thing here is just to know that the states may have a kind of sliding scale based on the revenue amount or the production amount. And then just so you can have that conversation with your CPA and just say, hey, what's the severance tax? You know, should we be getting a refund? Those types of things. And, you know, the state has all the forms. And as you go through and provide that information, it'll tell you how much you owe or how much you're owed by the state. So it's not something you have to really memorize this and figure it out. It's just something to be aware of and know that you should be checking that before you go to file your taxes. So.
Absolutely. And from everything we've talked about, we've gone through a lot of content here, but really it all boils down to keeping up with your minerals and the end result of that being able to do an audit to see that you're being paid correctly. And Matt, do you want to kind of recap? If I was going to sit down and I was going to do an audit, I've been keeping up with my royalties as I should. What are the steps that I'm going through to confirm this information?
Yeah, there's a couple of key pieces of information that you're going to be checking. That is the sales volumes for that month by product for that lease or for that well, the unit price that you were paid compared to benchmark prices like West Texas Intermediate for crude oil and Henry Hub for natural gas, minus a price differential that there's usually, I'd say, $10 less than WTI because of transportation costs and those types of things for your area, that net amount should match, be close to what you got paid for that month. You can look up things like the prices on the EIA, the Energy Information Administration website. They have all of the historical spot price for Henry Hub natural gas and for West Texas Intermediate crude oil. You can look at it by month and you can compare that to what you got paid. Keep track of that amount. The other thing too is for the production volumes, you can check the state website if you're not using an automated system like Mineral IQ. You can double check what was reported to the state in terms of both the production amount and then most importantly is the disposition or the sales volume. Operators will report both of those numbers and what you're paid on is actually what was sold. So even though, let's say for simple purposes, say a well produced 1,000 barrels in a month, well, if they only sold 900, you're only going to be getting paid on 900 barrels. The other 100 barrels is sitting in the storage tank on the well pad, and it'll get sold in a future month. But the important thing when you check the state information is you want to know, in Texas, they call it the disposition, or in some states call it the sales volume. And so those are the numbers you want to check against your check stub because they're getting paid for what they actually sold, not for what they produced, but maybe still sitting in a tank. So that's another thing to keep in mind. So basically to summarize, it's what are the prices that were paid? What are the volumes? And then you multiply those by your decimal interest, and that should be fairly close to what you got paid on your royalty check. So this is a very high level, quick royalty audit you can do just to kind of do a sanity check on your royalty check, make sure it's in the ballpark of what it should be. Now there's a lot of nuance that goes into this. If there's a discrepancy there, don't be alarmed. Again, there's things like what the actual midstream contract is. So what their operator is getting paid by for natural gas and natural gas liquids might be different than those spot prices. Again, the differential in the price based on your specific basin that you're in and the quality of the crude oil. You might be getting paid less than West Texas Intermediate, and that is correct. That is the way that it just is. So lots to think about, but you know, at the end of the day, you can keep track of it. The most important thing that you can use with that quick royalty audit is just to double check that it's consistently a certain way. So if, in other words, the price changes significantly one month, that might be a red flag to dig a little bit deeper and find out and ask the operator why the price that was paid for that month is so much different than West Texas Intermediate, for example. Why did they get paid so much less? And so that's something where you can dive in. And that's really the whole purpose of the royalty audit and really being able to understand how to read your royalty statement is to be able to do those types of things.
Absolutely, man. We've mentioned many times before that a lot of times this is just a case of human error if there is a mistake. It's not anything that's intentional. It's just something that can happen and go missed. And it's on us as the mineral owners to ensure that we're being paid correctly and bring up any concerns. More often than not, the operator and the division owner analyst will be there for you to help you as much as they can.
Absolutely. And just a reminder, we'll link to all of these resources we mentioned in the show notes. I have that royalty audit worksheet that you can download and use. And then again, do your research, see which is the best fit for you. There's a lot of great software products out there that help automate this now. I mean, it's good to know how to do it manually. But again, like we said, if you have more than one or two wells and to keep track of all this on an ongoing basis, it's going to be a lot easier to use a software system to manage it for you. So yeah. So thanks again, Justin.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks so much for listening to the Mineral Rights Podcast with your host, Matt Sands. Don't forget to subscribe and share at mineralrightspodcast.com. The Mineral Rights Podcast should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy.